Hello everyone and welcome to Celebrating Cinema. I'm your host and producer Elliot. This is a podcast made by Lab 111, a cult favourite cinema here in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Music is by Hugo Emmerzaal and artwork by Studio FFF. Please make sure to leave us a review and follow us on whatever platform you're listening to us. You can also follow us on Instagram at Lab 111 where we announce all the latest news on upcoming episodes. But now, for this episode, we are delighted to announce that we have had the pleasure to interview Gaspar Noé. Why? Well, not only is his latest film Vortex due to be screened here in the Netherlands, but we are also running a retrospective on his works, from films like Irreversible to Enter the Void to Climax to Love and also the latest film Vortex. But not only are we screening these, we're also screening some of his favourites, from Profondo Rosso, an opera by Dario Argento, who also stars in his latest film Vortex. And of course, we would not be forgetting the infamous Salo, one of Noé's favourite films. But how do we know this, I hear you ask? Well, he listed this in none other than Mubi, hand-picked streaming platform of curated cinema, which we are currently partners with. You can find all this at mubi.com/lab111, where you get 30 days for free. And you can also read some more of Noé's long list of favourite films. Now, let's hear what Gaspar has to say as he speaks with Kiriko.
On est bien peu de choses, et mon ami La Rose me l'a dit ce matin.
Pourquoi tu es parti? Où est-ce que tu es passé? Je te cherchais partout, par tous les quartiers.
Hello everyone, welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema by Lab 111. I'm your host, Kiriko, and today I am very happy to say that we are joined by notorious bad boy of cinema to talk about his latest film, Vortex, Mr. Gaspar Noé.
Thank you.
Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm always amused when people say I'm a bad boy or an enfant terrible.
You don't agree?
No, I'm a man. I'm not a boy anymore. I wish I was a boy.
Yeah, well, it's, you have a lot of films that are about boys, of course. Yeah, maybe this is kids, the first old man film.
About sleazy teenagers, yeah. But so that's why this time I wanted to do something else.
Yes, the bad man.
I'm not addicted to youth. Okay. I enjoy it.
I think everybody is a little bit addicted to youth. Yeah. So your film, which is now to be screened in cinemas here in the Netherlands, has been out for quite a while already. So you have been touring with Vortex.
The movie was shown at Cannes last year, you know, in 2021. I shot the movie very, very quickly. I delivered it very quickly. But then because of the COVID and the confinement issues, many movies of the last year were put on hold and distributed this year to make the commercial release more successful. So the movie finally came out in France, in the United States, in England last April, last May, and now it's finally coming out here. But the movie didn't age. When you make movies with old people, they don't age.
No, that's it's timeless in that sense. But do you still, I mean, I can imagine that you have been having so many conversations about your latest film, but also your work in general. Do you still enjoy talking about your films?
I enjoy when I'm talking of something else than my own movie. For example, yesterday I did an interview for the Volkrant. And they said, what's your favorite food? And I said, barbecue. So I spent like 20 minutes talking about barbecue.
Oh, that's nice.
Or then, what's the favorite poster of your collection? Then I could talk about my favorite poster of my collection. But mostly when you do a movie, especially a movie that is a little bit linked to your own life, even if the movie is not autobiographical, you get the same question over and over every 20, 30 minutes when you're promoting your movie. So my mother had Alzheimer's, so every 20 minutes I get the same question from a different person in a different language saying, oh, can you talk us about your mother's Alzheimer's? And they say, oh, okay. And then you get another question. Oh, it seems you had a brain hemorrhage. Can you talk about your brain hemorrhage? But it's like every 20, 30 minutes you restart the same conversation with someone else. And at the end of the day, you've met like 10 people. And it feels like you've been tested by psychoanalysts, by shrinks,
yeah,
who want to see if you respond the same, you give the same answer to the same question over and over. And
I will promise to not ask you questions about your mother. It's mind-exhausting
because it's very repetitive. But still, the good thing of promoting the movie is that you travel a lot, so you always ask for one or two additional days to hang out in Tokyo, in Paris, and I was invited to Moscow, but I didn't go to Moscow.
Ah, okay. Is there? Yeah, I can imagine. I will try to do my best.
It's just because I knew my credit card wouldn't work there.
I can ask you about your favorite breakfast and lunch later, but I have to ask you some questions about your new film. Maybe you could very briefly, for those who have not seen it, tell us what your film is about.
It's about an old couple. The movie starts when the woman who used to be a psychiatrist starts having symptoms of Alzheimer's. And so then it's a story, I know the whole story in the movie probably takes 3 months or 2 months, we don't know. And it's the decay of this woman who's trying to deal with her loss of memory while her husband, who's a film critic, is dealing with heart problems, and their son, they have just one son and a little son. The son is an ex-junkie trying to deal with his drug addiction, so it's like it feels like it was a psychological horror movie or a catastrophe movie like the Titanic, where everything's going to get worse every minute, and it gets worse and worse every minute. But hopefully in life there is one solution. It's called death. So
yes, it does indeed has a very, very slow, very calm decay almost. I think it is something that we are not used to seeing when it comes to your previous work. I would say that a lot of people say that it is your mildest Noé so far.
Yeah, but my previous feature film was Climax. It dealt with young dancers who are around 18 years old, and they're very young, full of energy, and they drink alcohol and they do drugs in the movie. So the movie had to be speedy as the characters. In this case, the main couple is 80 years old, and yeah, the pace of old people is slower, but you pay more attention to the location. Mm-hmm. When you follow them, you can see all the posters, all the books on the shelves.
Yeah, that is something
you can see how many how many pills they take every day. There's boxes and boxes of medication.
Yeah. It is one thing that I very much enjoy about all of your films is that you place your characters within a world of your own inspiration. Actually, I've heard that you just came back from a film poster shop here in Amsterdam, and you seem to do that in a lot of your work. What is the reasoning behind that? What do your characters get from this film world?
I don't know. Talking about movie posters, I'm addicted to collections in general, not only movie posters. I've been collecting since I'm a kid. It was comic books, then it was DVDs, then it was Blu-rays, and nowadays I spend all my nights checking movie posters websites or propaganda posters websites, and I don't buy clothes. I don't like going to trendy restaurants. I mostly like spending my movie usefully buying movie posters.
Is there a prize poster that you haven't been able to get your hands on?
There's a few, yeah. There's one or two of 2001 Space Odyssey that I still don't have.
Ah, yeah.
The most expensive one.
Oh, yeah. Well, good luck. I hope it will be yours one day. One of the two main characters of your new film is your friend and fabulous director, Dario Argento.
Yes.
And I can imagine that it is very exciting, but maybe come also with some complications to direct another director.
No, it did not. What really helped me to convince him to be in the movie is that we met 30 years ago, we became friends, that I knew that he liked my movies and I liked his. I mean, we have a very friendly relationship, but almost like a a family relationship because I became very close to Asia, and Asia also convinced him to work in my movie. But for me, he's like an uncle. So when I was proposed the movie during the confinement with one location and 2-3 characters by my producers, I said, oh, yeah, I have one idea. Let's do a movie about an old couple dealing with the woman's Alzheimer and their son. So my very first idea for the mother's character was to propose it to Françoise Lebrun, that I admire for her incredible performance in an old French movie called The Mother and the Whore, La Maman la Putain. And so I had her number, I had met her once, I called her, and she said, okay, yeah, I could be interested, but where's the script? She said, there's no script, especially in your case, you will be mumbling, so it's not important what you're going to say. And she got kind of scared, but she started watching my movies. I don't know if she really liked my movies, but she thought I was a cool person. But she was very worried about who would play the husband. And my very first idea for the husband was Dario Argento, because I wanted characters that would be charismatic and that you would want to hug when you see them, like, dealing with their physical problems or mental problems. And I always thought that Dario, when he was interviewed on TV or when he was on stage introducing his movie, he was the coolest, funniest, lovely director that you could dream of. And besides being the great horror film director that he is, but and probably also, if there is one movie that inspired me to do this movie, it's Umberto Day by De Sica.
Ah, sweet.
An earliest movie from the 50s, and it's a story of an old man who cannot, who's out of money, and he's 80 years old, and he's got a dog that's his only love in life is his dog, but he cannot feed the dog, so at a point he wants to kill the dog because he's ashamed of not being able to feed the dog. And it's a very sad movie. And the main actor in the movie was a skinny Italian guy who was not an actor. And that actor kind of reminded me, Dario Argento.
They look alike also a little bit. Yes, now that you see
so
it.
So that's what, when I told him, I have this idea for a movie that we could shoot quickly in Paris, but I don't have a script. I just have a synopsis or a treatment that it's 7 pages long, but... I switched the size of the letter, so I made it 10 pages by putting the letters in bigger fonts, but it was just 7 pages originally. But I told me, you're not an actor. I guess you don't have more memory than I do. So you'll be improvising all your dialogues. And we talked about Umberto Day. He loved that movie. So he ended up saying, okay, I'll do the movie. And it was extremely pleasant because it's like, I never felt I was working. I felt I was doing a movie and sharing the creation of this movie with actors that I admired, like Françoise Lebrun or Alex Lutz, who plays the son. But also I felt I was not co-directing, but creating something with Dario Argento that I always loved as a director and as a person. And so we shot the movie in 4 weeks. And also Dario, when he directs his own movies, he never does more than 2-3 takes. And in my case, I was always doing like 5-6 takes, sometimes 12. But after the second, third take, he would say, "Ah, we're done. It's over."
He decided for you.
Yeah. He said, the last take was perfect. So, okay, I'm going back to the hotel. And actually, he was right. But yeah, he says, well, if you're good, you don't need to reshoot it. Just reshoot when there was a problem. And so I learned to work fast. Yeah, and probably the good thing also of him like saying, okay, we're done with the scene, is that then I could go to another scene. So we managed to keep the whole process of shooting the movie inside the schedule of 4 weeks. Yeah. If he had accepted to do a 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th take, probably the whole production would have taken 6 weeks.
Yeah, but aren't you afraid that then maybe it would have been a film that was more to your liking?
No, because actually his performance was perfect. So, yeah. But yeah, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
So people are more shy and some people are totally inhibited. I saw the critique was good, so he said, okay.
Yeah, well, he had a fabulous, fabulous performance.
And I was not going to get a body double to do an additional take. So, wow. I'm extremely, extremely happy with the result of the film.
Yeah.
There's nothing. When I see it, there is nothing that I would want to retouch. Sometimes you do movies and you screw the one scene because I know that you got drunk the previous night or the actor did. And you always regret that scene is not as good as it could have been. But when I watch Vortex, there is not one single frame that I want to retouch.
Wow, that's beautiful. Congratulations on that. And is it... I guess it's also quite an honor to be asked as an actor, as a director. Is there someone who would ask you, a director, that you would say yes for?
I think like the many directors who want to work with other directors mostly want to go for the masters of cinema that they admire as film students, and Ingmar Bergman, he proposed Victor Sjöström, who was like the master of the silent Swedish cinema, to play in The Wild Strawberries, but Victor Sjöström was also an actor. Billy Wilder, he proposed Eric von Stroheim to play in Sunset Boulevard, and also to Cecil B. DeMille. But Eric von Stroheim was also an actor. Then sometimes some directors propose to directors who are not actors, like Godard proposed to Fritz Lang to be in Le Mépris, The Contempt, and Fritz Lang plays the director, and he's excellent in that movie. And in my case, I knew that Dario had never played in a movie, but on the other hand, he's so charismatic on stage or in every single interview or TV show that he's in, that I say, well, it's not a problem. He knows he's not shy in front of a camera. And when I met him, we also discussed about how lucky Godard was to have Fritz Lang saying yes to his movie.
Incredible,
so, if you say yes, Godard has Fritz Lang and I would have you. And he's a big admirer of Fritz Lang. And when he was a film critic before becoming a screenwriter and a film director, Dario Argento, one of his very first interviews as a film critic was with Fritz Lang. And so we talked a lot about Fritz Lang. And then... also, he was preparing a future film, but his future film, Dark Glasses, was delayed. So he was kind of put in on hold for 2 months until the pre-production of his own movie could start. So instead of just waiting at his house, okay, I'll just go to Paris and spend like 1 week checking the wardrobe and 4 weeks shooting the movie. And I believe he really enjoyed shooting it, and he's very proud. And he said, "Oh, let's make of this movie a triumph." So we went to Cannes out of competition. But when we screened it at midnight, he came into the audience room to the screen when we were raising his arms, and everybody was applauding. There was a standing ovation, and it was really it was a total triumph even before the movie started.
Oh,
the
so
movie
sweet.
Could have been very bad. The opening of the screen was so funny that.
But is it something that you would do, be an actor someday, in a film?
I've been proposed a few times lately to be in movies, but it all depends on who you're working with in front of the camera. There are some people you want to have fun with in front of the camera, playing the good guy or the bad guy or whatever. But also, it all depends on how much dialogue you have to learn or not to learn. If people let you be what you are, it's much easier. You can put a wig on, you can put a dress on, but you can still be yourself. In some cases, they ask you to be something very different from what you are. And I refuse many, many movies lately. Sometimes it was just for one scene, sometimes it was for 5 days of shooting, but... I thought it would be awkward to put a 19th century outfit and be in a circus as a manager of a circus or things like that.
Maybe if Dario Argento will ask you one day, you can return the favor.
I wouldn't mind being in a movie like Independence Day, a zombie who gets killed by a flying by a flying saucer or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was proposed because my parents were Argentinian and I was born in Argentina. My Spanish is fluent with an Argentinian accent, but lately there was a friend who went to shoot a movie in Argentina, a European friend, so they want to do a cameo in the movie, and finally say, oh, yes, but it didn't happen. But I was supposed to be the kind of journalist. But I said, yeah, I could make it.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen for other reasons, because they changed the dates and I couldn't go anymore.
Actually, Argentina is a place I don't really feel in your work.
I've never shot a movie in Argentina. I was assistant director to an Argentinian director called Fernando Solanas, who used to live in France and who moved back to Argentina. Then he started a political career. He was doing documentaries, etc., and many narrative movies. But I worked twice there as assistant director. Yeah.
Mm.
And my father still lives there, and I go every year once, twice, sometimes three times.
But not the setting for one of your stories?
No. Up to this day, I shot movies in only in France and in Japan.
Yeah.
And I did a short movie once without dialogues in Cuba, but it was a short film.
I see. I recently saw in an interview that Tokyo is a place that you would seriously consider moving to in the future. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I spend so much time in Tokyo. I've been there like 30 times. Probably I'll go there next month. And but there's another city that I've never been to, and everybody who knows me says, oh, that's the Japanese city that will turn you crazy. It's Osaka. So next time I go to Japan, probably I'll try to rent an apartment for 2 weeks and discover Osaka.
It's a city that screams a lot more than Tokyo.
Yeah. But sure. Actually, you know what? It's a weird thing. When you go to Tokyo, you don't want to hang out with your European friends, American friends, Argentinian friends. Mostly when I was there, I was always like quitting all my friends. And disappearing in the city and just meeting people who would not speak English and spend the whole night having fun, not understanding one word of what they were saying. But I like being like a fish
out of its tank. Tokyo needs you, I'm sure. I think I'm from Japan.
Yeah.
And all your experiences from Tokyo have been so different than the ones that I've had.
Yeah.
I think it's also the luck that you can have as an outsider in such a machine city.
Yeah, also the people permit you a lot of things because you're a foreigner. They say, oh, this guy is not it's not even human. It's a mad dog that doesn't understand how things work here. And now you can misbehave, and then people let you do things that they would never let a Japanese person
That's
do.
That's so nice.
When I was there, I've never been more careful in my whole life about drugs than when I was in Japan, because most of my friends were arrested just for a filter of a joint or for having a P test, and they would spend 6 months in jail just because the police proved that the person had smoked marijuana once 10 days before, and then 6 months of jail, and you're thrown away from the country. So each time I was going to Japan, 2 weeks before going there, I wouldn't accept any joint, any pill, Mm-mm. anything to make sure that I could pee in a police station, and they couldn't blame me for doing drugs. So, but then, because I was hanging out with lots of party guys there, I was drinking like never before. And Japan turned me alcoholic in some ways.
I think Enter the Void is the wet dream of a lot of Japanese kids who want to live wildly but are not able to.
I know some like French kids or whatever who said, oh, we wanted to go to Tokyo after seeing your movie, but they go to Tokyo because they think it's easy to go there, take ecstasy pills, sell LSD, and make it funny, but then they all end up in prison.
Yeah.
I'm kind of responsible.
What do you do, Gaspar? I want to go back a little bit to Vortex. because what is so beautiful in this film is, or in all your films, is that you have a style of filming where it is almost as if gravity doesn't exist anymore, and you put people in a dream where they lose a sense of self and dreaming, which is also a theme that is now an important theme in
Vortex. I don't believe in the ground that much.
Mm.
No, each time I wake up in the morning, I feel it's like a new dream starting. I mostly never remember my dreams, or once every 2 weeks I remember what I dreamt of. But otherwise, when you open your eyes, oh shit, we're getting into a new dream.
Well, that is, I guess, what Vortex is also does. Is it's a very grounded film in that sense.
Yeah, it's grounded, yeah, but you can tell that all the characters are totally spaced out, and also that whatever they do, at the end, it has no consequences, because the river of time will erase them.
They're spacing up, but they're not trying to escape to somewhere. They're actually, I guess, more trying to hold on to the ground rather than anything.
To the dry womb that is the apartment of the parents. Yeah.
One line that I liked very much from your film is that one character at one point says that life is about either taking drugs or becoming old.
Oh, yeah, I did not write the dialogues in my movie. I had a 7-page script that I turned into a 10-page script, but by just making the letters bigger. But all the dialogues in the movie were improvised by the Dario Argento, François Robin, who I asked to mumble instead of articulating, or Alex Rutz. And there are some scenes with Alex Rutz giving crack pipes and needles to the real junkies that we cast it from the streets, and so those scenes in which he's talking with his junkie friends or the crackheads from the streets, those guys are real crackheads, and so I didn't know what they would say or not. And sometimes during the first take, they come up with a good idea. I say, oh, can you repeat that? So I think he came out with that idea, you know,
it's so
during
spot
the first
on.
Take. It's, oh, also for some people, and in the movie, the character of Alex says he's a film director doing documentaries. I would say he's a failed film director, mm-hmm. that probably has some little jobs and also probably became a failed director because he was doing heroin, and that doesn't help you to work in a constructive way. But I know many guys who are like him, who still say I'm a film director because they directed 1-2 pop videos and probably 1-2 documentaries that no one has seen. But they're very cool guys, very intelligent, but they took wrong decisions or party decisions all their lives. And so I don't relate to the son's character as much as I relate to the father's character, played by Dario Argento, who's more like a successful film critic who actually is handling a very difficult situation. But when he came with this sentence, Alex, saying, yeah, life is about taking drugs or getting old, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. But it was his idea, and it fits to the character who doesn't see any future, an intellectual future to his own life. So it's just, oh, if I get old, I'm going to become like my mother. Or if I do drugs, I'm just going to hit the wall. It's funny, but I almost died 2 years and a half ago of a brain hemorrhage, a sudden brain hemorrhage in the middle of the afternoon. But I was sent to the hospital. I did morphine for 3 weeks. I survived without damage. But when you get close to those situations, you just feel like you're going to hit a wall and there is nothing behind. Mm-hmm. It's just like the final moment is when you hit the wall, and then the movie's over. Like when you're watching a movie and you suddenly fall asleep, like the movie's over and you didn't notice it. No one's going to know what your past life was if you didn't write it down. I was lucky to meet the right people who helped me to finance movies that I thought were kind of personal, but some very talented person didn't have the luck to be in Paris, meeting the people that I met who helped me to make my own movies. Making movies is a very collective art, and also it's an art that needs. It's not always art, but when it's an art, it needs money to be created also.
Yeah, and maybe for those lost sons who don't have the money or the means or made the wrong decisions, as Alex in the film, what type of advice do you have for these young sons of yours that are trying to become a great man like you
try
are?
Try again. Not obsessed, but yeah, I know, for example, in Paris, a girl who's an excellent painter, but she doesn't want to expose her paintings because she's afraid that people have weird reactions to her work and say, well, that's not an issue. You have to show, if you paint, it's to communicate, to show it. If you want to make movies, you want to make them to show them to other people. But I was born with a father who was a successful painter, so for me, like a painting, is the first part. Then you have to expose the painting, sell it, and do another painting. So that's the whole process. But there's so many people who write scripts all their lives, and they don't even go to propose it to producers. You have, because they're shy. At the end, shyness doesn't help when it comes to cinema.
Maybe these fearless words are a way to end this interview. Thank you so much, Gaspar. We're already looking forward to your next film.
Oh, wow. And that's a wrap. We are truly grateful to Gaspar for taking the time to speak with us. I'm sure after listening, you understand why we're running a retrospective on such an interesting character in cinema right now. Of course, as I mentioned, you can watch many of his films from Irreversible, Enter the Void, Climax, Love, and also The Screening Vortex, his latest film. Don't forget, some of his favourites will also be screening Profondo Rosso, an opera by Dario Argento, and of course, the infamous Salò. We want to take this moment also to thank Paradiso Films for arranging this. To find other great interviews like this, including the likes of Mia Hansen-Love and her latest film, Ambour Matin, and Martin de Jong's latest film, Narcosis, you can find more episodes at Celebrating Cinema on whichever platform you're listening to us on. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review, and share this episode so more people can find out what Gaspar has to say. I'm sure many more will be interested to hear. So, what's up next? Our next episode will be on Film Noir, Tales from Nightmare Alley, another program we are running here at the moment at Lab 111. We'll be exploring such an iconic moment in Hollywood cinema that truly left its mark. Find out more about the history and some of the moments that marked us. So, what's left to do? See the films, buy the book, take the cannoli! As always, this was a Lab 111 production, produced by myself, Elliot. Music from Hugo Amazal and artwork from Studio FFF. Until next time, folks.